Hello and welcome to Here in LA, Westwood Edition. Today we talk with Zan Dubin. Zan is an electric vehicle activist, a former LA Times journalist, and an Angelina since 1966. We will talk about what the village was like back in the 60s, what it was like living in a home with both her mom and dad as television directors, and why we should ignore the fact that the face of electric cars is not the guy we once thought he was, and instead concern ourselves with the fact that vehicles without tailpipes are better for the environment. So please welcome Zan Dubin. Hey everybody, I'm sitting next to the LA River with Zan Dubin.
Ho!
Hey! Zan, first of all, what an unusual name.
Right, most people say the exact same thing and it's short for Alexandra.
Oh, perfect.
Although I have never been called that except when my mom was angry at me.
And does the government call you that when...
The government also. Yeah, fortunately they don't call me often. But it's actually from the play by Lillian Hellman called The Little Foxes.
Oh.
And there's a character in there named Alexandra with the nickname Zan. And my mommy, whose birthday is today, hi, late mom, I love you.
Aww.
Yes. And she played the role.
What day is this today?
It's April 5th. It's actually hands-off day, too.
It is hands-off day. And are you going to go to those protests downtown?
I am, from here.
Right on. Tell everybody what t-shirt you got going on.
My teacher's t-shirt says, question internal combustion, because I've spent a lot of the last 24 years advocating for electric cars, which do not use internal combustion.
What car do you drive right now?
I stand by my Tesla.
I've got a Tesla too. which one do you have?
They're going to hunt us down, Model 3.
Ooh, you got the faster one than me.
What do you have?
I've got the Y.
Oh, okay. Okay,
yeah.
For a family car.
You know what? I think it's fine that we're both talking about this right now.
I think it's excellent.
Because I bet you there's a lot of people like us who have very little in common with Elon, who drive this wonderful car.
Yeah.
But we're kind of in a weird spot right now.
So here's the deal. I abhor Elon. I'm really sad and angry at everything that he's doing. However, I think an even greater and more imminent threat is climate change. So I don't apologize for cars without tailpipes, including Tesla. I advocate for all models and makes. I say get whatever you want, but I'm not going to cower or take back my Tesla. You know, yeah, it's a great car. It just is. And I don't have the money to get a new car right now. And I'm not ashamed. I, again, anti-Tesla, no, Elon, no EVs, yes.
I like that. Also, it's a good car.
It's a great car.
I think it's my favorite car I've ever had.
The other thing is the charging network. He did do several brilliant things. He's probably still got the same brain there, but not only did he create a car company, but he simultaneously stood up an infrastructure, and it's the best anywhere, and other vehicles, EVs, are now starting to use it. So we need it.
We do. Okay. Do you discuss your age?
I'm 67.
67, you look fantastic.
Thank you.
Absolutely fantastic.
It's joy. It keeps you young.
When did you move to LA?
I think it was 1966.
How old were you when you moved here?
Nine years old.
Do you remember moving here?
Lots of it, yeah.
What do you remember?
Well, let's see. We rented a house in Westwood, right outside of the village.
Do you remember what street?
Denslow Avenue.
Okay, now this is a pretty nice neighborhood.
Very nice neighborhood.
What was your parents doing before they moved here?
Okay, my daddy was a television director.
What did he direct?
Well, shall I work it up slowly? And I'll just backtrack a tiny bit. We moved here for the classic westerly story. You know, he was directing in New York City. He had been blacklisted twice and had to go underground for 5 years directing commercials without a credit. right? And fortunately, he was able to do that, because as we know, a lot of people actually killed themselves as a result of the blacklist or lost jobs and careers. But he survived, and but then really wanted to do dramatic television. And of course, L.A., not New York, was the hub. So we came here. So that's why we had a nice house. And right away, he started to direct episodic television like Kojak, Hawaii Five-0, earlier than that, The Virginian and that stuff. And then the peak of his career was directing MASH, the TV series. Yeah.
Did you get to meet any of these?
I did. And I'll just say he directed more episodes than anyone, including the beloved Alan Alda, who, of course, a lot of the stars directed. But I was at an age where I was just too shy, you know? Like, I mean, I loved it, but so no, I didn't have much interaction, although Mike Farrell, who is a giant of a human being, remains, you know, a friend.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay. Let me ask you real quick about Hawaii Five-0. Even though MASH was one of my favorites and my mother and I would watch it together when I was a kid, did he ever have to go to Hawaii for any of that?
Oh, hell to the yes.
Oh, really?
And what he would do is turn in his first class ticket and then fly the whole family there. So
wow.
I'm not saying I went 12 times to Hawaii, but yes, we took a few family trips to Hawaii
How
to do that.
How fun is that?
Totally fun. And he did this huge, you might also remember, it was like some sort of Charlie's Angels episode in Hawaii. So I got to go for that as well.
You worked at the LA Times.
I did.
What years did you work there?
Okay, I had an internship there while I was still getting my degree in 1984, and then freelance, basically full-time, for the next 5 years, and then went on staff 1989, and then the last 10 years in Orange County at the Bureau there, till 99.
How about that?
How about that?
Was an Orange County Bureau?
Oh, my God. It was, you know, because L.A., we used to say arrogantly that if the L.A. Times didn't cover it, it didn't happen in
right.
L.A., right? Even though the Herald Examiner was around at the time, you know, they were just nothing.
Yeah.
So, but that no competition of that type.
Hold on.
Okay.
Nothing? They were a good paper.
I didn't mean that. They were a very good paper. And we have photographs the day they folded of their people coming over to us
yes.
because the Times snatched them up. Yeah.
Not only did they... Because you were there when that happened.
Yes.
So I was in college at the time and loved newspapers, still love newspapers. And so I was a little bit happy because some of my favorite sports people like Alan Malamud moved over.
Oh, wow.
But also because I was still a teenager, the comics moved over.
Oh.
And the LA Times comics all of a sudden became twice as good because I guess the Herald Examiner had an exclusive with a whole bunch of comics.
I see.
So all of a sudden, the LA Times was like the best in the world of everything. It had all the best writers all of a sudden because of that merger.
It did. I was fortunately there at its peak. And so then, in fact, in 1989, what happened down in Orange County, I wrote for Calendar Section, Arts and Entertainment, and Henry Segerstrom, if you want to talk about neighborhoods,
yeah.
A big developer in Orange County, owned a ton of the land down there and opened up a performing arts center. So suddenly there was an art scene that needed to be reported on. So the year I was hired, we hired, I think, 40 editors and reporters, and it was the glory days. And why I even brought up like the Register, there was no real competition. You didn't compete with any of the reporters downtown, but in Orange County, we had the Orange County Register.
Yes.
And it was brutal.
I bet. Well, because anytime that I go down there and it just seems like even the word Los Angeles is a red flag to them. They don't want anything. Was that how it was in the 80s as well?
Exactly. And, you know, what we had always tried to do, look, I wasn't ever management, but what I heard was that the goal was to out-register the register. In other words, be more like Orange County and cover Orange County better than the people who'd been doing it for years. And I don't think we ever could, even though I scooped the pants off of competition. Yeah.
Okay, so where'd you go to high school?
On the west side of L.A.
Which high school?
I went to Windward.
Windward High. I don't know this. Is this
it's
a private school?
Fancy private school. Oh. There were only 60 kids there, though, at the first year that I went, 1971. Though I have to really tell you that, I mean, yes, look, I grew up in a family of some wealth. Not Vanderbilt wealth, but Hollywood director wealth.
I would hope that the man making MASH is making some dollars.
And I will say he would. He'd wake up at 4:30 in the morning. You're going to make me cry if I talk too much about him. But he was such a hard worker. And so, you know, he earned every cent. And he was beloved. But besides all that, Windward. So I could, they could afford to send me to private school. But it was much more, it was really a long-haired hippie rebellion school than any sort of prep school. In fact, we didn't have letter grades. We had written evaluations and all of that.
I love that. Yeah. What neighborhood was Windward?
Windward was, what would you call it? Probably Santa Monica, right on the edge of L.A. And I have to tell you, it was the days. So I think I went there in 1971. Jane Fonda visited our school up on this little porch when she was, at, you know, like known as Hanoi Jane at the time.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Let's talk about Westwood Village for a second.
Oh, I'd love to.
Since you lived right there.
Yes.
That was my favorite place when I moved here in the 80s. And it hurts my heart that it has collapsed into this, almost a black hole now.
Yeah.
Can you explain why it's like that and how you enjoyed it when you were young?
I super cannot explain why. Not only did it turn into a black hole, but all these decades later has not been able to come back. I can't explain it. But it was about 66, 67, and it was a true village. They call it Westwood Village for a reason. And of course, newcomers wouldn't know that any of those skyscrapers along Wilshire Boulevard, none of that was there. It was just those two beautiful movie theaters.
Yes.
And probably the place I remember most, more than anything, was the Hip Bagel. It was just this very funky place to get a coffee and a bagel before gourmet coffee, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably got herb tea. And I just remember like a poster of John Lennon. He was still alive. And you were just, you know, my brother was 3 years older. He had hair down to his shoulders. He played in a rock band and he wore a suede jacket just like David Crosby. And that's what we would do. And we'd go to movies in Westwood.
Yes.
And it was, yeah, place to go.
I remember even in the mid 80s, there was almost too many movie theaters there.
That's right.
So many movie theaters. There was even the movie theater across the street from Wilshire, the AFCO.
Right.
Which also had like premieres and stuff.
And I think it was called the Regent Theater, was sort of where you would go to see Woody Allen premieres.
They had some sort of special with him?
I don't know, but that was just, was known. That's where you'd go.
I saw a Woody Allen premiere. I don't know if it was at the Regent, but at the Crest.
Oh, I love the Crest.
Yes.
The old Crest.
Right, yeah. Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so for a kid in the 60s, was it the same as a teenager in the 80s where you could just roam? There was record stores. There was cheap food.
Yeah.
I also feel like there was outlets. Like there was Converse outlets. Like they wanted to market, I feel, to the UCLA students. But they also knew that there was a lot of high school kids there too.
Mm.
Like just youth culture was center
well,
in Westwood.
Dude, we didn't have anything called outlets. Or we didn't have running shoes. I'm serious, because when did they start all that stuff? Nike
the
up in Oregon.
Trend.
Right, the jogging was
of like
no.
1979.
Wait, no, this is partly why you could go anywhere in L.A. At those days, because for one thing, the traffic was like nothing. You could go across town in 20 minutes when you wouldn't. You'd have to take a vacation to do that today.
Yeah.
But the other thing was, I'm losing my track there, but so no, there was, you know, no. Oh, you could go anywhere because you didn't exercise every day. Nobody exercised. You didn't have to fit in your exercise. You know, so you had all this time. But no, it was mostly mom and pop stores. And I do remember they would do like little, you know, stalls. You'd buy cool jewelry and incense. Okay.
Yes. I've talked to people of your generation of LA, especially in Malibu, that they would hitchhike all the time.
Oh yeah.
Would you hitchhike?
I wouldn't, but my brother did. Everyone hitchhiked across the country. My ex-husband hitchhiked from Texas to Eugene, Oregon, and never looked back and never got hurt.
But you didn't because you were a young lady?
I was probably, just too shy. But okay. Women would hitchhike.
How about that? Okay, so what college did you end up at?
Oh, I have a really checkered college career, but I finally got, because I was screwed up in my early 20s, but I ended up getting a journalism degree from USC, which was the place to study journalism. I'm going to say, besides the great classes, because a lot of the professors worked at the LA Times. And I just have to name drop, my first news writing instructor was David Savage. So I graduated in 85, and he taught us, journalism 101. He still covers the Supreme Court for the LA Times today.
He does. So you grew up a hippie kid, and now you're a hippie adult.
For sure. Rebel.
Has there been anything in your life that has made you think, maybe Reagan was right?
God, no.
You should see the look in her face. You've never swayed one way or the other.
No.
Are you more strong in your beliefs?
Well, I got to tell you, I have to admire the kids that grew up with parents of whatever persuasion and go in a different direction, because I did not. Well, actually, it's really kind of fun. Whole wheat bread came in when I was, coming of age. Like, we did Wonder Bread until then. But again, my brother was a little bit older, so he was on the cutting edge. And we started to eat carob brownies and whole wheat bread. In 1969, we did a peace march at Pally High, part of a nationwide protest against the Vietnam War. But to answer your question, no, I've never veered. I haven't been as overtly politically active as I am today. I did other things like writing for the Times, but the thrill is still there.
So in a way, Hawkeye Pierce has been your spirit animal?
Charlie Dubin, the blacklisted campaigner and with stars in his eyes, he was really, truly a dreamer who stood by his principles and refused to name names. And I think about him a lot these days.
That is beautiful to hear. So did he have to be in one of those McCarthy, what would you call those?
You would call it House Un-American Activities Committee, HUAC as it's known. And what these congressmen did, led by Joe McCarthy, was haul people up in front of these committees and ask them, are you now or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? And my dad took the fifth, I think it was 52 times. Claiming, of course, that I don't want to say anything that could incriminate me, but he did that so we wouldn't have to name names, because then they went on and asked you, who did you associate with, and they'd want you to name names. And my mom, by the way, was blacklisted as well. She'd been a television director in live TV in the 50s.
She was?
Along with my dad. And
what?
I have to tell you the depth of the Red Scare, operative word scare, because my dad was open about what he did and who he was. But my mom, he told me he was a card-carrying member of the Communist Party. My mom would never tell me, even to the day she died, because it's going to make me cry, but she was afraid they were going to come after her, And it was that depth of fear that they generated. But yes, that's what they did. They my dad told me, I could go on about this, but it was 1958 for him, which was 10 years after the much more famous Hollywood 10 had been hauled in front of the and sent to jail. But these guys knew that they had nothing on him. In fact, they had already reviewed his records and FBI records and stuff. But they did it, just to keep the fear alive and also to politic and get their annual appropriations budget. Dad wrote a letter to that effect.
So even though your dad had the card, quote unquote, how come they didn't have anything on him? He was smart about covering his tracks?
So we're really getting nitty-gritty here, but he...
How often do I get to talk to a kid of a commie?
You know, and we're here to tell the truth,
yes,
honestly.
Yes.
He had been a member. When the Red Scare started and it threatened his livelihood and maybe, you know, his whole livelihood and family, he quit the party. And so when, I think, well, see, I'd have to think, but he told them, no, he took the fifth, so he told them nothing, but he was not a member and hadn't been for years. And I will tell you this, the first time he was served to testify in front of HUAC, I was 6 months old, and my brother was 2.5. So that gives you the sense of, you know, he did not want to jeopardize this young family.
Yeah.
So,
do you consider yourself a communist?
No, never have.
If we went back in time, would you have been part of? Would you have been? Or have you known any?
Maybe because of the principles that he stood for, and that was equal pay, health care for all as a right, not a privilege, equal rights, and we would call it racial justice today. My dad was friends with Harry Belafonte, and his name was gold in our house, Sidney Poitier. So it's these very fundamental, and if that makes me a communist today, then call me a commie.
I guess we're both extremists.
You've got a C on your hat, by the way. I don't.
I tell people it stands for the Chicago Cubs, but maybe it is partly red.
It just makes me pissed off because, you know, they use that against you, and even
like
though
they would have used this against me.
Well, no, I'm saying like us liberals, Democrats,
yeah,
climate activists, they call us communists and
yeah,
socialists.
And so many other things that I'm like, what part of blah, blah, blah am I? And also, I'm a Christian. Would you be calling Jesus that? Because I think Jesus wanted all those things, too.
Exactly
right. You know?
And we were not Christians, let me tell you that.
Can we rewind real quick back to your mom?
Yeah, Mom.
Were there a lot of female directors back then?
Perfect question. She was probably one of like five, and
wow,
it was the days of live television, and she worked her way up. She'd been a writer and like, you know, associate director, and yeah, so it didn't last very long because I do believe the blacklist hurt her more than it would hurt
no,
my dad, which was understandable, right? I mean,
mm-hmm,
women, just the fact that she told men what to do on the job was very rare. And so I think she had a harder time coming back.
What kind of live events were we talking? Like the news or parades?
Live television or talk shows,
talk shows.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And drama. She directed some real hardcore crime dramas, episodic, out of New York.
So did you have nannies? Did you have babysitters? Like what happens if both mom and dad have to work that day?
Yeah, I had one. Yeah,
that's
her
so
name
great,
was Olga and Ingrid. Yeah.
Olga,
yeah,
and Ingrid. Ingrid.
But I will say my mom got out of that when I was fairly young, so she was around a lot.
She wanted to be a full-time mom?
No, she did not. But like I said, I think she was hurt by the blacklist.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Sucks.
So, okay, so that part does suck.
Yeah.
But was it also wonderful to come home from school and there's mom? Like,
oh, gosh, I'm flashbacking. Yes, I couldn't
yeah,
wait till she that's came home, and I'd wait, look out the window until she did.
So, no. Yeah. How long did you guys live in Westwood for, as far as your age goes?
Right, 1 year.
Only 1 year?
1 year, yeah.
And then where'd you go?
Then we had been sort of renting to see if this Westwood move would work, and then we bought a house in Santa Monica.
Santa Monica real quick?
That was a sleepy bedroom community at the time.
Do you remember what street you were on in Santa Monica?
Esparta Way, which is north of San Vicente Boulevard.
Ooh.
Yeah, baby.
So closer to Palisades.
You know, sort of our backyard was looking down onto Rustic Canyon. So we, in fact, that area was evacuated during the fires.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Dad is doing okay.
Dad's doing good.
I like where he's picking where to live.
Yes, it was, and you know, of course, much more affordable back then, too.
That area was affordable?
Oh, hell yeah. Now, look, compared to, you know, where we're sitting right now, much more expensive. But still, nothing like the inflationary prices we have.
This is why I'm curious, because you said rustic. It is rustic there. There's trees. There's a little river. For a kid, that must have been a great place to grow up. And
because I wasn't actually living there, but that's where I went to elementary school, Canyon Elementary, and we would play in the canals in Rustic Canyon with my best friends. Yeah.
And I'm sure that is nothing like when people think of Los Angeles,
right?
What they'd envision.
Right.
This like a baby forest over there, right?
Kind of, yeah. And it still looks exactly the same, in fact. And it's, you know, what, a few blocks from the beach, actually, from Pacific Coast Highway. And it's not the Pacific Coast Highway, people. And you can verify this with Pat Morrison. It is PCH. No, the.
So it's the 10, the 405.
That's right. But PCH.
I want to talk about Santa Monica today.
Yeah. Oh.
It's kind of got the Westwood story. Like, how does the Third Street Promenade turn into another black hole? How is that even possible? And this is my theory on both of them. And you brought it up. When you move from mom and pops to baby gaps, baby gap, you can get in Iowa. So if I'm an Iowa tourist and I come to the touristy place of Santa Monica and all I see is a baby gap, why should I buy there? I want something that's funky and L.A., truly L.A. that I can bring back to my friends in Iowa or China, wherever it is that I'm visiting from. Right. And back in the day, when we see Pee-wee's Big Adventure and his bike gets stolen at the Third Street Promenade, and they pan back, you have all these mom-and-pop bike stores and magic shops and, like, remember Midnight Special Bookstore?
I was just going to name that. Yep.
So, unique, individual mom-and-pop stores getting steamrolled by chains.
Yeah.
And then
property
the chains
values.
The chains get bought by some private equity firm and cleared out. And then we have these black holes. Yeah. That's my theory. Do you have a different one?
I mean, all of this is a little bit above my pay grade.
Okay.
But, you know, you're right. All of the cool stores, most of them on the promenade, are gone. Mm-hmm. I used to buy my ballet shoes at Leslie's Shoes on the promenade.
Right.
But, of course, you know, the backdrop to all this is the homelessness problem in Santa Monica.
Yes.
And, again, above my pay grade. But it is bad, and there's violence associated with it. And, and yet, on the other hand, I don't think the population's going down.
Nope.
You know, and we still have all of the hotels along PCH, and I think the stats are something like 35,000 workers commute into Santa Monica every day, which is why you don't want to be driving west on the 10 in the morning. Yeah.
No. I also feel like Santa Monica isn't really doing the best as far as housing these poor people and homeless people. And that, I think, is a bad evolution from the Jane Fonda days, where you probably grew up, where it was more of a liberal kind of a thing. Now that it feels to me that now that it's upper middle class over there, they're not crazy about having...
Okay, well, you might say I live on the wrong side of the tracks in Santa Monica, because we have a ton of new housing, and I know that it's not 100% affordable housing, but probably five blocks from my home is this, I don't know, complex, affordable housing, but all the wraparound service for people who are transitioning.
That's fantastic.
From the street. It is fantastic.
What street is that, what you're talking
it's
about?
It's near, like, probably on 11th Street. So
right in the heart of Santa Monica.
It's the heart. It's near the freeway, so it's a little bit more affordable there.
And also close to the Expo line.
Yes. And, you know, you don't hear these success stories. I'm not here to tell you it's a screaming success, because I just don't know, but it is there. It looks good. It's been open for at least a year. It's right down the street from the Meals on Wheels, which I volunteered for. And there's another one close. Oh, guess what? I would say one block from me, and I live on a very nice residential street. They converted a motel. Actually, it's a decent-looking motel, into also same thing. They don't have the wraparound services, but nobody checks into the hotel. It's all transitionary housing
I am so glad to be wrong about this.
You know, exactly.
This is why I want to talk to the real people.
You know, that's so true. I don't want to be Pollyanna. It is bad. But yeah. Sometimes, you know, often, because that's the way the world works, all you hear is the bad stuff.
And it makes sense that it's near the expo line, because if I'm broke, I probably can't afford a car. I certainly can't afford insurance and a car and gas. So I can get on the expo line. I can get work in downtown or Culver City or wherever it is, and then come back. Yeah. And I mean, that's kind of like the ideal life.
Yeah.
For a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, I love the Metro. I took the Metro and to the Dodger parade when they won the World Series and got my first case of COVID. I'm here to tell you. It was packed and I was stupid and didn't wear a mask.
I'm surprised that you were that healthy for that long.
Really lucky. Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about your activism.
Yeah. Okay.
What would you like to talk about?
Oh, cool. Well, it started when I married a man who's now my ex, but we got involved in the electric car movement starting in 2002 when we got our first car, EV.
And 2002?
2002, baby. Oh, gee.
What car was that?
It was the Toyota RAV4. And the car most people know about is the EV1, that little zippy thing. GM, the difference there was that GM only leased those cars, whereas Toyota made these for sale. So when all the car companies decided to defy environmental regulations, they didn't defy them, but they wanted to shut them down, they took back the cars that were on lease and started to literally crush them. See the movie Who Killed the Electric Car?
Okay.
For that, 2006. But again, Toyota sold it, so we bought it and we were able to keep it. But we immediately got active because, look, today we know that automobiles and transportation is the number one source of greenhouse gas emissions. So to find, you know, you always feel like when you recycle or whatever it is, it's not enough. But when I got into my first EV, it was a rush from my head to my toes because there was no tailpipe on this thing. And I knew I was making a significant contribution. So we immediately got active. And by that, I mean on the sidewalks with our picket signs, in the boardrooms, all of it. And we were able to save about 800 cars that would have been crushed. And we formed an organization called Plug in America. And I don't work with them today, but I'm wearing the t-shirt. Mm-hmm. And the slogan on this particular t-shirt is Question Internal Combustion, which takes you, by the way, I have to say it, right back to the 60s, 70s, when one of our slogans was Question Authority.
Right.
Yeah.
Where would you charge in 2002?
Home.
You did what it took to, you had a house, where was your house?
In Santa Monica. Super simple. It's called a charger. Stick it in your garage.
So just 110?
You could do 110. Ours is a 220.
Yeah. So like a washer dryer.
Exactly.
And was the city cool about this in
2002? Oh, yeah. There were no and no preventions against that.
Because it's like a washer dryer. No
exactly.
Big deal.
Exactly. You just stick one in your garage.
And so, okay, that original car, do you remember how much range you would get for it?
It was about 100-mile range.
I mean, that's normal.
And
I mean, I don't want to say normal, but that's doable.
Adequate. The average each American drives, I think, is still about 40 miles a day. But the people don't even know that. You know, like me, I didn't know how far I drove each day. Was it 40? Was it 100?
Right.
So, yeah.
So when you did want to go to Palm Springs for Coachella.
Yeah.
Would you rent a car or did you have a gas car too? It sounds like you'd never had a gas car
anymore. I once drove to Ontario from Santa Monica, which is what, like 65 miles.
Uh-huh.
And I charged I know what it was. I just drove 55 miles the whole time, speed. And I made it on 100 miles from Santa Monica to Ontario and back. And did not run out of charge.
Were you sweating bullets at the end?
Nah, a little. I was kind of defiant, like, look at me, I'm going to do this. And it worked. Of course, today, you know, most cars are over 200-mile range.
Yeah. But in 2002, 2005, you didn't have anything like that.
No, we had one gas car in the family.
Okay, you did.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Until, so we would use until that. It was time to
divorce.
Go all in.
No. Divorce. Which is what happened.
He was like, it's either the gas car or me. You're like, adios.
No. Other reasons for that, but yeah.
But so there was never any range anxiety because you had this gas car or because you never really...
You know what? We planned. Okay.
What?
I know exactly. You plan. And yes, we were lucky enough to have two cars, privileged enough. And if it had to be longer, we would take the other one. But that's really all it took. You know, it wasn't, I'm here to tell you that the oil companies, as you well know, have been spending literal billions for years and years and years on PR campaigns alone to scare the out of you about range anxiety. Look, it's not perfect for everything. That's the other thing. People think, oh, you're telling me that an electric car is a silver bullet to all our problems. We never said that.
Right.
But, you know, we're in dire trouble with the climate. And, and even if you did have just one EV in the family, that's 50% fewer emissions. Hello.
There you go. And I do appreciate all that. But the reason I'm talking about this is I want people to be reasonable about their wants and needs, because you're absolutely right. Most people are not Uber drivers. You're not driving 200 miles in a day. And even if you are, nowadays, especially here in LA, you can charge at wherever and have lunch and come back and your car is ready to go again. And when I say lunch, I mean a 20-minute lunch. You don't have to spend 2 hours to charge your car anymore.
Fast charging.
So back in the olden days.
Yes.
The beginning of it.
Yeah.
How long would it take you to charge that RAV4?
Of course, the question is always, that depends on how much charge you have to begin with.
Okay.
But if you're saying probably from zero to full, you know, my memory serves 6 to 8 hours. But, you know, I've always said when people go, how long does it take you to charge? We go, less than 5 seconds, which is the time it takes me to take my plug and put it in the car and walk in, and then you go to sleep. You charge at night.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's no big deal.
It's no big deal.
Did you inspire other of your friends to go electric early? Because you're the earliest adopter of this that I've ever met.
Yes. And as I said, we formed a nonprofit called Plug in America, which today does many things, but it also puts on 2 nationwide EV celebrations. We're smack in the beginning of one of them. It's called Drive Electric Earth Week. And owners and drivers like myself put on local events, which could be an EV display or an EV test drive. And we also involve like whole home electrification.
Ooh.
So yeah, so very, very active. So to say, did we influence others? 100% yes.
Some of the critics, which probably are being funded by the gas companies, and God bless them, that's their world. They're trying to stay in very profitable world.
Your God bless them. Mine doesn't. Okay.
I'm mimicking Phil Donahue.
No, it's all good. Balance is good.
Because when Phil Donahue said God bless him, you knew there's a left hook coming.
Okay, that's right.
So, the critics like to say the batteries to make these batteries.
Dude, you got to do your research.
I'm talking to you, my research.
Right on.
You tell me.
Right on. So
what about the batteries?
I interrupted, but I think
they're saying that the batteries are environmentally bad. You need slave labor in Africa to make this. All that.
Okay.
What's your
on the slave labor? You know, it's not perfect yet, but at least until the current administration, our president was putting a lot of money into domestic battery manufacturing, and it's still going to require probably some mining, for instance, but for one thing, at least it's at home and it can be better monitored.
We can mine here in the U.S.?
I think so. I think, yeah.
That's
cool.
You
know, they even have lithium, which is the main element down at the Salton Sea, and there's one big factory trying to get itself going down there.
How about
that? So right here, you got to do Salton Sea.
Okay.
Oh, and I know just who to...
Well, it's out... I do LA City.
Oh, I see. Okay.
If they pay me, I will go out there.
Okay.
If Santa Monica, if you want me to do here in LA in Santa Monica, you can pay me.
There we go. Anyway,
we can
do it domestically. And the most important thing, because anyone with common sense can see that the main elements in those batteries can be recycled.
They can.
They're very valuable. Because they're used for things like cars, right? And so there are several companies that are well-functioning now recycling automobile batteries, as well as all the batteries. And you know, the thing is, too, it's just not black and white. Because the emissions, of course, that's the direct pollution from gasoline cars. You know, it causes cancer, it causes asthma, and as we know, always in the most disadvantaged communities the most.
These critics also talk about the electricity. When we plug in, especially me when I plug into my supercharger, because I'm not blessed with a house with a charger, they say, well, you have to burn coal, you have to do stuff to get that electricity, so you're not really helping the planet. What would you say?
For one thing, I would say I have solar on my roof.
Good for you.
So I drive on sunshine.
Do you really?
Yeah, sure, for sure, because the energy I'm generating is renewable, right? And even if I charge at night, on paper, most of my electricity is clean, right? And the fact is that it's not perfect yet, but California has a very high percentage of renewable energy on the grid. Now, if you're in the middle of the northeastern, western United States, it's not as clean.
Right.
But so again, it's not black and white, but it's much, much better than most people think.
So you really are living the hippie life.
Man, oh man.
Do you have a compost in your backyard?
I have a very small one in my kitchen. My ex does. He has a big one. Yeah.
What other hippie things do you have going on in this house?
Let's see. I'm trying to think. It's so funny, isn't it, hippie? Because the environmentalists, I call it long-haired hippie too, but it's just there are a lot of people like me, activists, doing them.
But we need you. This is why. We especially somebody like me whose heart is in it, but I mean, I guess I need influencers, and you're an influencer, and so that's why I'm honestly asking these questions, because I want to be more like this, and I would love to have a house that has solar.
Did you know also that every utility, if you pay just a little bit more, not a lot, you can ask them to send you only renewable electricity.
Really?
Without putting a panel on your roof. Yep.
And I'm going to have to look into that.
Community solar as well. You can tap into a program where they're generating the solar offsite, not at your house, but you can get that solar as well.
LADWP, are they part of this?
Yes.
I really like them. Should I like them?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, this is why. I like their rebate system.
Uh-huh.
So even when I wanted to buy a new space heater or a air conditioner unit, or even when I was thinking about buying this Tesla, I went to their page and I found out what their rebates were. And it seems like they want to be greener and greener, at least reward people who are being greener.
I think I'm pretty sure they still offer rebates on EV chargers for the home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I don't really want to talk about our president, but I feel like it's interesting that his relationship with Elon has gone up and down.
Well, the Elon thing is a Greek tragedy, because in 2002, of course, he kind of wasn't on the scene yet, just beginning, but he did become our leader,
and the EV leader.
The EV leader, mm-hmm. and it's been tragic to see, it's just terrible.
And I think his success as a leader is his unbelievable wealth. Because if you and I were working for Toyota, let's say we were both vice presidents of Toyota, and we had the same idea that Elon had, we'd have to convince 20 other VPs of Toyota that this is the way it's got to be. When you are the dictator, because that's kind of how he is, and I think that's why Trump likes him, because he aspires to be a dictator.
Mm.
When you're the dictator, you can say, I don't want a speedometer next to the wheel.
Right.
I want it way far away on this iPad.
Right.
And they've got to do it.
Right.
When he says, I want my Cybertruck to look like a kid designed it, they've got to do it.
Yeah.
And so the bad things they have to do, but also the good things they have to do, too. And I think that's, again, this is my theory, why Tesla was able to leapfrog all these, really important car companies, and why a lot of car companies were left in the dust.
He had a lot of grit and belief as well, and he almost lost his shirt. I mean, there's a famous clip that they're using now, probably against him, where he talks about this. It's also with SpaceX, his space company, where, his rockets kept exploding, which is very, very normal. It, he says manufacturing is hard, space is hard. So that was normal, but he persisted. That's another thing.
Just like she did.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to speak here on something you'd rarely hear anyone talking about, but that's overpopulation.
I love that you want to talk about this, because he's against the fact that we are going in the direction you're talking about.
Yeah, he thinks we need to just keep procreating just like he does. I think he has 13 kids now.
Yeah.
And anyone who can count to 10 knows that too many people are destroying the planet.
Right.
So, yeah.
And I think I saw a chart that said something like in the 60s, so when you moved here, we had an eighth of the population that we have today.
Yeah.
Is that number
something like
that, you know?
For sure.
Why wouldn't we look at that as a bad thing?
Thank you.
Right?
And
when we talk about traffic, the fact that you used to be able to drive from one side of LA to the other and now you can't?
Crowded classrooms, pick a topic. Crowded hospitals, yeah.
I mean, it's not like we're getting more water.
And it's not, right, water problems. what we have said is that just offer people choice. You know, just, that's a terrible word to use. I'm sorry. But we're not talking about asking anyone to... You know, what is the eugenics, right? We're not going there, but just, you know, and there's a lot of what we call pronatalism on our society, which is social pressure to have kids. Like, oh, honey, when am I going to have my grandchild?
Right.
You know, we don't need that crap.
No. Can we talk about the LA Times real quick?
Let's do it.
Because we both love the LA Times.
Yes.
And you were there at its peak.
Yeah.
The entire time I was there, they were bankrupt.
When were you there again?
2007 to 2011.
Okay.
And so the recession.
Yeah.
And they were bankrupt the whole time, and Chicago was involved.
Did they literally go bankrupt, like technically?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
I think people are going to start trusting the LA Times less and less because of this owner. Do you feel that way?
I'm not going to talk about the owner, but I will talk about Elon and X.
Okay.
Because as we know, it is full of lies and disinformation and conspiracy theory and no checks on hate. And I do think that had a huge impact on our past election. And that's what I'm really in my darkest moments so afraid we won't ever be able to draw back, you know, especially with the fall of traditional journalism.
In a way, because X is like 1,000 LA Timeses.
Yes, yes.
And if 950 of them are spewing lies, then the average reader who wasn't lucky enough to work at the LA Times doesn't understand that this is baloney. And shouldn't be trusted. And there's ways to fact check, especially with ChatGPT nowadays. Like, it's so easy to fact check things. And sometimes the community notes tell you that it's wrong, and yet you still see a bunch of comments on X telling you, oh,
don't believe them. Or,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, for years now, Trump has been saying media is the enemy of the people. I just read today that he's been saying that about academia. No, it was Vance said, like, academia is the enemy. I mean, we're in a bad way. That's going to influence. And, you know, David K. Johnston, who's Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, started covering Trump back in his Atlantic City days. He's written several best-selling books and such. What was I going to say about it? Oh, yeah, he runs off the stats on how few people in America can even read. The literacy rates,
I've heard about this,
are very low. I can't give you numbers, but that's a concern too, you know.
Which has been, the only reason I know about it is this is Trump's excuse to get rid of the Department of Education, which makes no sense to me. But basically his theory is if the federal government can't do it, let's cede it over to the states. Maybe they can be more successful at it, which is, I guess, okay in theory, but in practice, that's not what the Department of Education does. It gives poor kids school lunches.
Lunches and things.
And, things that...
It helps get grants to go to school.
Right.
And if you take those away, besides depriving the student, you're depriving the college of that income.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So, I mean, you're USC, I'm UC Santa Barbara. I feel like I feel like I was blessed to go to a good school.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you do too at SC. Does it hurt you when you hear about all these scandals at SC?
It makes me feel good that we have great reporters unveiling, you know.
There you go.
Yeah, really, really, really does. I never really had a huge allegiance to SC. Don't tell anyone. I was a little bit older. I didn't live on campus.
Uh-huh.
Very grateful for my education there and the hop, skip, and a jump to the LA Times. But it hurts me less. It more makes me, because look, this kind of reporting protects us all, you know. It's not just like big splashy scandals. It's your local city council that may pass a bond. That means you're going to pay $200 more a month. Or, you know, it's things like that, accountability. So hell to the yes, you know.
And those kind of stories are not being written by these grizzly old veterans. That's what the young kids get right out of SC Annenberg. They have to go to the water board meeting. They have to go to City
right.
Hall.
That's right.
Which is not glamorous. It's
no.
not real fun. And that's where you sharpen your teeth. That's where you learn how to be a journalist, right?
My first week on staff down in Orange County, I had to cover a Costa Mesa City Council meeting that went to 2:30 a.m.
And if you weren't there,
that's right.
The politicians could look around and be like, all right, let's pass what we want to pass.
A lot of people criticized democracy dies in darkness. That is still the Washington Post slogan, but it's true.
Okay, let's wrap up with something I rarely do, but because you're such a veteran of LA, let's talk about the West Side real quick.
Okay.
Where should I eat if I'm on the West Side?
Okay.
So which I rarely am anymore.
Okay. I'm not a foodie at all. So
perfect.
You could come to my house for a big salad. But I'll tell you where I eat.
Okay.
And that's a place called Crimson Cafe. There's two of them in Santa Monica. And it's really good Mediterranean. Nice atmosphere. You can sit outside. So I go there from time to time. Where else?
Do you ever go to Ray's, the old coffee shop?
I went there a few years ago. Yeah,
uh-huh.
And it's just like a traditional. We used to have so many of these, like Ships.
Does yes, that,
yeah,
ship. With the toasters.
Space Age toasters. There was a place in the 80s on Beverly Drive in Beverly Hills called Larry Parker's that used to have phones on the table.
Oh,
like
how
the
cute.
Toasters, so that you could call someone and ask them out on a date at the table over. Swear to God.
Oh, if... The other table would have like a number on top of it?
You know, I don't know really how it worked, but
did
that
you
was
ever
the point.
Hit on people?
I did, but not through a phone at a restaurant.
Where did you dance when you were a teenager?
Okay, well, let's see. I started with hardcore ballet on Montana Avenue. Great school. Years
That's
and
not
years.
The dancing I was talking about.
Okay, then when I started, there was a place in Marina Del Rey right off the 90 called Popcorns, and it changed names over time, but in the 80s when I was interning at the Times to blow off steam and stress, that's where I would go. There was a place in Westwood called Dylan's
was three stories
three
tall.
Three stories!
I remember it very well.
Yes.
I think there's a weed store on the bottom floor now.
No doubt.
Or next door to it.
No doubt.
I remember Dylan's very well.
Right?
There's some pictures of Michael Jackson. Because he lived in Encino, he came across the hill to dance there.
Oh.
Because remember, each floor was different music.
Right, that's right.
And so, and he wore like a COVID mask, even in the 80s, to disguise himself.
Right.
How cute is that?
He'd be outlawed today, yeah.
But it's still Michael Jackson dancing, like everybody knew. And that's why these pictures
hey,
are out there.
Hey, that dude dances just like Michael
How
Jackson.
How great. Okay, so Dylan, did you ever go to 321 in Santa Monica?
Can't.
It's 321 Santa Monica Boulevard.
Okay, I got one called the Sunspot on PCH near the Palisades. It was in this little sort of cutout on the west east side. Oh, yes. A lot of people did a lot of dancing there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, what a pleasure to meet you today. Thank you so much for spending this time with
and
us.
And you as well, Tony.
What advice do you give to people who are still on the fence about electric cars? What should they do?
Test drive one. Just and
if they don't want a Tesla, what should they consider?
Anyone. I'm not going to name names because there's lots of good models on. But, you know, get with somebody who's owns one and has lived with one for a while. You know, don't even necessarily start by going to the dealership. Get the real from an owner.
I love it. Thank you so much for everything.
Thanks, Tony.
All right. How great was Zan? One thing we forgot to mention when we were yapping it up
was she really wants you to sign her petition to influence the Dodgers to end their sponsorship with Phillips 66. Nearly 30,000 people have already signed it, so just Google Dodgers end your sponsorship deal with Phillips 66. You know who we drive in our electric cars with back to the 60s? Our Patreons. So shout out to Nancy Rommelman, Sean Atlow, Matt Mills, Sean Wallace, Greg and Molly, Jamie Taylor, Mark Johnson, Kira Ann, Barney Greinke, Ben Welsh, Jen Adams, Trevor Wilson, Bree Wild, Dougie Gyro, Christina Up North, Robin Carey, Adam Shorn, Ben from Down Under, Chris from the ATX, Gregor, Phil, and Cal. To be a Patreon, just go to patreon.com/hereinLA. Want to support us, but Elon just slashed your job with a chainsaw? No problemo. Join us. Join the hundreds of people who follow us on our new Substack. Just go to hereinLA.substack.com and sign up for free. Here in LA is produced and edited by myself, Tony Pierce. Music supervision by Jordan Katz. Songs by Orgone and Jordan Katz. Special thanks to Cindy for creating the logo, Jen for inspiring this, and Zan's dad for making MASH incredible.
Thank you, Patriots.